You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Mistook the image as a dream, while these tears of joy cascade. Innocence, it seems, has done the same. Life without honor on him in an instant. Doubtful cordials of pain have led us to distant lives, mingle with similar caverns of shame. Who to blame, my brother? Who to blame, my brother?
My brother.
Who to blame?
Who to blame? Who to blame indeed? Good evening, everyone. You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Today is May 7th, 2018. And this is the first broadcast for the month. Of course, for my show, Monday. And you're listening to Arcane Semantics. I'm your host, as always, Richard Kotokevich. And I thank everyone for listening, both my show and to the station in general. And do help out, you know, anyone who is able to. When you can, from time to time. I know finances can be rough, but please consider giving a donation every now and again to Renegade Broadcasting and our sister site, Renegade Tribune. It's great to check out a lot of articles, gets a lot of web traffic. You know, a lot of people do seem to love a lot of the articles at Renegade Tribune as well. It's a great thing to turn on to friends and family who might not have as much time, you know, to listen to the shows here at the station as some of us who are more devoted, but definitely trying to get some of these messages and concerns, values out there to a wider audience all the time. I have with me here tonight my Arcane Semantics co-host, and that would be Rolly Quaid. How are you doing this evening, Rolly?
Richard, how are you doing tonight?
I'm feeling pretty good, you know, feeling okay, all things considered. This year has really been moving along fast. I don't know, how do you feel, Rolly? How's things been progressing for you?
I've been buried in snow for the past 7 months. So it's great to actually see the grass up here in the Midwest. Actually, you know, when I wrote about articles about Edward Snowden, you know, I was very much writing about being snowed in myself. For example, there was a huge snowbank that I had to crawl over that was 4 feet tall just to get to my car so I could go to work. You know, absolutely love the snow. Didn't grow up with it when I was in North Carolina. But, you know, if it doesn't snow in Minnesota, it's not that pretty. So I kind of appreciated it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people catch your articles on Renegade Tribune. If they haven't, go check out the articles from Rolly Quaid. And yes, yeah, Rolly had formerly resided in North Carolina. I was actually not updated until just recently on this. But yeah, no, Rolly does reside in Minnesota these days, and you say for about 5 years now. So that's the state of former Governor Jesse Ventura of Minnesota, formerly Jesse the Body. I did like his show a bit early on there, especially for someone who winds up being a governor. You know, it seemed like he was a bit of a threat. Maybe a bit of controlled, you know, opposition, limited hangout. Many could argue, but I don't know. At the time period, there wasn't as much, you know, hard hitting content out there. He did seem to explore. I didn't catch all of his episodes. He did seem to explore a lot of, you know, controversial topics and try to get some good people to comment on his series. What has been your take since you've been living there the last 5 years? What's your take been on Jesse Ventura, by the way?
I actually met the governor on three occasions. One of them was on a book signing. I came to see him. He wrote a book about JFK assassination done by the CIA. That's kind of old news, you know, already been done a couple of times. But I was curious what he thought about Michael Collins Piper's take on it, you know, Final Judgment. And when Michael Collins Piper was alive during this book signing, and I wanted to see, you know, what he thought about the Israeli involvement with the JFK assassination and his take on Mordecai Vanunu, the whistleblower, who blew the whistle on Israel's nuclear program, which we're going to be talking about a little bit tonight if we have time.
Yeah, okay.
And he told me to go to the back of the line. But I was actually floored, you know. He gave me this look, he like, not interested, no way, no how. I've heard that he's Jewish. I can't confirm that. His last name is not Ventura. I bet it's some sort of wienery name. He's a mixed bag. You know, when he goes to the press, right, like when he talked to Judge Andrew, what's his last name, Matt Negro or something like that, you know, he was awesome then. You know, when he goes on to shows and he talks about, you know, the lobbyists and that politicians need to wear the NASCAR jacket to show who they're sponsored by, you know, I love that. You know, but he did get on the Judy Wood binge wagon a little bit. You know, he actually told Alex Jones that there wasn't explosions inside the World Trade Center or Tower number 7, that it was done by a laser beam from space. But it's not like the one you see in Star Trek, Judy Wood would tell you. That's a different type. It's more like a microwave.
So just to clarify for listeners, your take on Ventura, he seemed more credible in earlier years, and you think maybe he got a bit controlled, especially maybe by some, you know, Jewish interests along the way, you're saying?
He's one of these guys that say good things and bad things. When Chris Kyle, what was his last name? The guy who did American Sniper. You know, I stood by him. You know, he committed libel against the governor, said that he hit him in public. You know, the American Sniper has lied on numerous occasions. For example, he said that he was sniping people during Katrina, which turned out not to be true. So did he really punch Jesse Ventura in a bar that was filled with Navy SEALs? You know, it didn't happen. He couldn't back it up. He couldn't corroborate his story, you know, and went to trial. He died in the middle of the trial. Jesse had to keep going. I mean, because he was a Navy SEAL himself.
Right.
If you're a Navy SEAL, you deserve respect, you know. So I give Jesse Ventura respect, you know. I think he deserves a degree of respect. You know, he said some really great things. You know,
I agree.
His show Conspiracy Theories was good. I mean, I think it was well done. But one thing about it is, though, if you tell somebody you're a conspiracy theorist, they automatically associate you with Jesse Ventura's show. And you got to tell them, you know, Jesse Ventura, it has his own material, and I got my own myself. You know, we don't necessarily agree on everything, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that I hate the guy or dislike him or would not tell anybody not to listen to him. Because he does come out against AIPAC. He just won't tell you it's an Israeli or a Jewish lobby. He'll just call it AIPAC, you know. It's a bad lobby. He won't tell you it's a foreign agent, you know. And that narrative needs to be heard by his listeners. But it's the verdict out on Jesse Ventura. I like him better than Alex Jones, you know, by a long mile.
Okay. And so, yeah, you'd say that as far as his show is concerned, and that, I mean, it did help get some stages of awakening out there to some people. I don't really like the term conspiracy used myself, conspiracy theorist, just because it, to too many people, I gets perceived as, you know, false information, you know, entertainment. You know, I can't help but assume that a lot of people, even the term alternative media, could conjure in the heads of some, you know, those magazines they grew up with at checkout counters of department stores, the Inquirer, you know, and that sort of thing. If they don't dabble, they see things in very black and white terms as far as the news and the entertainment world. And you know, you think of illusionists like Penn and Teller, that a lot of the conspiracy theorists can be reduced to in the minds of the general population when they're just really not aware, and have this perception of the corporate media, you know, CNN, NBC, ABC as, you know, absolute truth.
Absolutely. And another eye-rolling moment I had with Jesse Ventura was when he decided to run in 2016. He didn't actually go through with it, though, but he said he would only run if shock jock Howard Stern would run with him. And Howard Stern's one of these guys that makes fun of vulnerable adults to get his cheap little dollar. And he said harsh, harsh things about Palestinians. He talked about the stockpile footage that our U.S. media had of Palestinians burning a flag right after 9/11. Was it really after 9/11? I don't know the date. We need to figure out that timestamp on that. But they went to a town that everybody in that town had 500 calories per day on a normal daily basis, and they gave them candy. And they gave him a flag, and they gave him a box of matches, and they gave him a can of gas, and they lit it on fire. You know, that's not fair at all, you know. And then he talked about the dancing Arabs. I didn't see no dancing Arabs in New Jersey or in New York. I saw dancing Israelis.
Exactly.
And that's something that our president right now promoted, that there was dancing Arabs during 9/11, and the Saudis were trying to get home to their girlfriends and boyfriends.
Trump's saying that right now.
Yep.
Wow.
But he, let's go back to it. I know I'm bipolar, but I want to give you a sandwich. You know, there's some bitter, then there's some sweet, and then you go back to bitter, right? Jesse Ventura, you know, he said that, told Playboy magazine that religion's a crutch for weak-minded people, and I agree with that. And that's all I wanted to say.
All right. No other, those are your main, comments on, about the man.
Correct.
Positive endorsement, negative. I'd say. Yeah, exactly. I think that was very objective, fair, and balanced. And I really don't think he'd take offense, actually, to your response there. So I would like to, though, move on to what we're discussing, you know, to possibly start the topics off with, referring to some articles, including one of yours. And also this, umbrella-ing topic related out of Aleppo News. This one was titled "Israel Campaigns Against Global Free Speech," and I can't help but think of a couple other articles with similar themes lately, Rolly, regarding scenes of people and their treatment of the Israeli flag. I know you did one article related to a politician in the States here, and then I sent you an article regarding a similar theme in Germany, if you recall. First, maybe we could touch on your article. I believe this is one of the, or the most recent of your publications, just from the other day, right? This was, I don't know if I'll roll you. You're still picking up okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. I muted myself.
So all right. Well, yeah, no, if you wanted to open up with your article on Patrick Little.
Patrick Little? Yeah, so Patrick
This was a Senate
running,
candidate.
Yeah, he's running second in the polls to Dianne Feinstein right now with 18% and rising. But he was recently banned from the state GOP convention for desecrating the Israeli flag. Ooh, the ultimate unforgivable sin. He put his footprints on it and stood on it and stomped on it and also spit on it. You know, my hat's off. You know, that's a feather in your cap for me, Mr. Little. You know, you definitely have my vote and my support just for that. I would vote for a transgender Muslim from New Guinea before I would vote for Dianne Feinstein, the gun grabber. You know, that woman is, I don't want to call her a troll because that might flatter her a little bit. You know, she's worse than that. You know, she has been a thorn in white people's spine for years since she's been in Senate, and she needs to take the hell on, and she does not need to be serving her fifth term into office. It makes me.
That was the real point of your article. It seems like it's more against her as a concern. I mean, I don't know. Because I've seen like some criticism, even from, Renegade editor staff, you know, pointing out some possible, you know, actions or stances of him that might not seem favorable. I guess that's really not what you were trying to stress. It's you're trying to stress that this desecration of the Israeli flag, just standing up for America first, as opposed to Feinstein, Dianne Feinstein, is what's really important. I don't know. Do you think it's possible though he could be doing it for bad press? That he's like going over the top by doing it to, in any way, like this. Renegade editor's note has suggested.
Yeah, it's very well possible.
Okay.
I've heard a couple of comments that he might be linked to Siege or a Freemason. I don't know much about Little, to be honest. I didn't know anything about him until he did this initial act.
You can't trust him is the point. Okay. Yeah,
I don't really know much about him. I was just trying to report what happened. I was just trying to tell you the color of the cow, and he jumped over the fence. I wasn't trying to tell you to worship the cow.
Absolutely. You know? And this whole business is just an inevitable reaction, though, of, well, this symbolic sort of gesture, desecrating the Israeli flag. You possibly had a chance to read the article I sent you discussing similar cases in Germany?
Yeah, desecrating the Israeli flag is a liberating experience that everybody should bask in. If you don't have, if you can't afford to buy one, make your own. You know, make a poster of it. Get creative. But I must warn you that it is the only flag that is fireproof for every single flag that they make. Can you imagine generating so much hatred that people want to burn your flag?
Now, the interesting thing with the story in Germany, Raleigh, is that, I mean, this was bait to test and analyze, you know, people as subjects in a case study, you know, kind of like a psychological profile is the way this seems to be described. Because the article out of Ynet News says, entitled "Israeli Flags Denigrated on German Streets," states a recent test by a German newspaper. So this is clearly a pro-Israeli newspaper trying to, you know, gauge reactions. Was the original intent? I guess they just didn't expect the amount of reaction there would be in so quickly. So I just find it a bit amusing. But it's good that people are starting to react, you know, because our countries across Europe, you know, of our people are really getting replaced. You don't see this in any other parts of the world. It seems like the European countries and here in America, which has had large European population, is experiencing population replacement. But this goes on to say, a recent test by a German newspaper, Israeli flags were hung on German streets to test citizens' reactions. Flags ended up being taken down, stepped on, set aflame, or just thrown in a nearby garbage can. Against the backdrop of recent rise in anti-Semitic incidents in Germany, they state, the popular tabloid Bild decided a week ago to hang Israeli flags in different locations throughout the country to, with the aid of hidden cameras, examine how they will be treated. And then there's a quote from the paper. The results of the test were shocking, the paper wrote, noting most flags were either taken down, torn to shreds, stepped on, lit on fire, or thrown in the trash. A flag displayed in Berlin was removed only 42 minutes after its hanging, with the two individuals removing it, tearing, and then stepping on it. Later, another person filmed himself with his mobile phone trying to set the flag ablaze without success. In Munich, the flag was removed after 61 minutes from the moment it was hung. Two people who the Bild described as Arab-looking noticed the flag, removed it, and threw it in the garbage near the city's main train station. When a Bild reporter asked them why, approached them and asked them why they did it, one of the two retorted, it's none of your concern. In Frankfurt, 11. So now this is really trying to negatively portray Arabs in the proceeds. But of course, you know, this was bait by pro-Israeli newspaper in the first place. But it goes on. In Frankfurt, 11 Arab-looking people were documented spitting on the flag and continuing on their way. After 81 minutes, one passerby removed it and threw it on the ground. It continues for quite a bit here. You know, this is very telling, Rolly, and I'll tell you why. Any other incidents, you know, crimes or any actions by citizens, by you know, the residents that could seem unsavory or unappealing, negative, criminal, they are always managing to censor the ethnicity. Completely, you know, the race, ethnicity, whether or not they're an immigrant or a local of the country, racially, ethnically. In any other situation, if you've noticed, as of recent, you know, only when it is pro-Israeli, pro-Jewish are we finding in this article, you know, them being so specific in every one of these paragraphs mentioning the quote-unquote Arab-looking perpetrators. Isn't that you know, stark contrast to how much we normally would not see that being mentioned in any news stories if you're talking about any other victims, you know, other than, of course, the Jewish people, Rolly?
Absolutely. If it's a Paki gangbang in Sweden, that's censored. But if an Arab burns an Israeli flag or desecrates it or throws it away, that should be on everybody's forethought, you know, that happened, you know. It's absolutely appalling. Maybe they're trying to work Arabs into submission because they couldn't do it in the Middle East because Arabs would rather die than submit to Israel. Maybe they want them to go to Europe and spread their multiculturalism and create more babies and Europeans. And then find a way for them to get as comfortable as Europeans because, you know, Arabs generally, unless they're like rich Saudis, they don't live comfortable lives. They live like villagers, you know, in certain areas. And they kind of have blue collar street knowledge that Europeans kind of lost because of their comfort items, you know, and indoctrination over the years. And maybe it's a way to corral them to make think that the Israeli flag is sacred because Arabs tend to listen to the liberal media because Fox News is kill Arabs all the time network. CNN really is too, but they're going to use the liberal media to try to indoctrinate Arabs, Pakis, Afghanis into this idea that desecrating Israeli flag is a big no-no.
I wanted to mention a bit from this Aleppo News article. I should probably save it for after the break, but it just mentions, you know, how much Israel manages to control over free speech that otherwise, you know, would not be tolerated. Mentions situations currently in Australia, Canada, France, England, America. You know, it's a pretty good article, a handful of paragraphs. So I'm going to get to, we got a couple minutes before the break, though. I don't know. What else did you want to get to in the first hour, you know, related? I know we would like to maybe mention a bit of the war zone updates in some of the countries in the Middle East. You might comment on. Yeah, Raleigh?
Yeah, absolutely. And we could also mention hate speech legislation inside of South Carolina. The state that has the Confederate flag as a symbol is now trying to pass hate speech for speaking out against Israel. I hope the South rise again and push back on this particular legislation because it's detrimental to the Southern way and the American way in general to not have freedom of speech. You guys say that you hate political correctness. Now that Trump is in office, are you going to take pushback? I know Nikki Haley is the governor of that state, and she was put into power by Adelson himself. And remember at that AIPAC conference, she was a speaker at AIPAC, and she told Donald Trump, you know, because Donald Trump pushed the idea for her to run as well, and she said, "I ain't going to be no wildflower, y'all. I'm going to speak my mind," as if she's a Southern Belle. She's from India.
Amazing.
Gives us one side of World War II. They don't want us to know the real history of what happened over 70 years ago, seeing through the eyes of the German victims. The horror of the terror bombing, the mass rape of millions of women and children, the torture and murder of civilians, the death camps for surrendered soldiers, the ethnic cleansing of whole countries, and the planned extermination of the entirety of the German people. After watching Hellstorm, you'll never see the good war and the good guys in the same light ever again. Watch for free and get DVDs at hellstormdocumentary.com. Yeah.
And we're back. And before the break, I was starting to introduce an article out of the Letho News, Israel Campaigns Against Global Free Speech. Alarmed at the rise of anti-Semitism and anti-Israeli sentiments on the internet, Israeli politicians recently called for nations around the world to enact legislation prohibiting criticism of Jews and Israel. Lobbying to outlaw global free speech is nothing new for Israel, however. It has been in the business of criminalizing speech for decades. Israel is in the precarious position of receiving tens of billions of dollars in aid every year from nations that purport to support democracy, while simultaneously oppressing the Palestinian people and perpetrating what Nobel Peace Prize winners Bishop Desmond Tutu and President Jimmy Carter deemed an apartheid. If the American or European people ever knew that their tax dollars were being used in such a way, they would surely cut Israel off. In order to conceal this truth and stifle any criticism, Israel and its lobbyists rely on sympathy from the Holocaust and labels of anti-Semitism to discredit critics. Even U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry was recently called an anti-Semite for supporting a peaceful resolution to the Jewish-Palestinian conflict. Kerry is not alone, however. President Obama and just about anyone who has ever opposed an Israeli policy has been labeled anti-Semitic by his enemies. In order to add teeth to these labels, Israel lobbyists around the world lobby endlessly to criminalize anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial. Israel's threat of forcing world governments to enact new laws against free speech should not be taken lightly. Israel and its lobbyists have already succeeded in enacting stiff anti-racist laws in most Western countries. These laws have been used on numerous occasions to jail academics, pro-Palestinian activists, and also individuals who have spoken provable facts that are deemed anti-Semitic. Carnards. In Australia, Jewish groups lobbied successfully to outlaw Holocaust study and, quote, hate speech. As with most laws regulating speech and academic study, it has been routinely abused and is now on the list for repeal. In fact, the law is so tied to Jewish lobbying that the Jewish newspaper Haaretz published an article, Australian Jews brace for a fight against the repeal of hate laws. In Canada, Jewish groups lobbied for the enactment of hate speech regulation and defend its use today. In 1983, Israel lobbyists filed a complaint against Ernst Zundel over a book he had written. He was tried several times, his citizenship application in Canada denied, even though he had resided there for decades. He was detained for 2 years without trial and eventually deported to Germany, where he was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment. In France, Israel lobbyists publicly complained about comedian Dweudon's parodies of Israel and the Holocaust. His home was raided, his shows banned, and hefty fines were imposed. England also followed suit and barred Dweudon's entrance into the country. In 2003, the French legislator and Israel lobbyist Pierre Lelouch managed to push through a law which extends the definition of discrimination to include nationalities so anti-Israel activists could be jailed. In 2009, the Lelouch law was used to convict 20 anti-Israel activists. In England, Jewish lobbying efforts successfully enacted strict hate speech laws. And in Austria, acclaimed historian David Irving was incarcerated after Israel lobbyists complained about his academic work. The European Jewish Parliament and the chief Israel lobbyist in Belgium recently called for similar laws to stifle criticism of Israel. According to the Canadian Jewish News article, French vigilance on anti-Israel speech provoking backlash, Israel lobbyists are also attempting to enact similar legislation in the Netherlands. In America, the Israel lobby has been fighting mightily for years to prohibit hate speech. Those efforts have been unsuccessful thus far, but they have managed to enact hate crime legislation. As Abe Foxman of the ADL noted, the social consequences in America for bigotry against Jews are so severe, given given disproportionate Jewish influence in government, media, finance, higher education, professional sports, etc., that anti-Israel speakers often seek graver consequences than the criminal sanctions they would face in Europe. For example, if one were to be labeled an, quote, anti-Semite, even if the allegations were wholly unsubstantiated, he would most likely be fired and ostracized from society. You know, I mean, it's basically like the era of the witch hunts, you know, just being accused by one person, you know, you're ruined, you know, your former way of life, regardless. One has to realize that Israel's efforts having nothing to do with hate speech, anti-Semitism, or Holocaust denial, but are rather about stifling critical speech that affects Israel and its lobbyists. For example, we know that Israel and its lobbyists are not offended by Holocaust denial because Israel and its lobbyists are the leading proponents of American Holocaust denial in the world today. Israel should also not be particularly offended by anti-Semitism because Israel is actually one of the most racist and anti-Semitic nations on the planet. That's very ironically true there. Today, Israel is furiously enacting anti-free speech laws, hiring internet trolls to spread propaganda and disinformation, and even asking the Jewish owners of social media websites, Facebook, Wikipedia, Google, and YouTube, to remove material Israel does not like, regardless of its truth or merit. Israel has also campaigned against political parties it does not like in Greece, Hungary, and Ukraine. In Greece, the anti-Israel Golden Dawn Party was disbanded and its leaders arrested for no legal reason. This is a dangerous precedent that threatens worldwide freedom and must be combated immediately. Before speaking out against such Israeli efforts is also illegal. And this article concludes, laws protecting free speech are put in place specifically to protect speech that powerful groups find objectionable. Otherwise, there is no free speech, and it is just a matter of time before the list of prohibited phrases grows to include everything the powerful oppose. If it's illegal to speak about certain races, the disabled or elderly, then why not government employees, and then the rich or poor, and so on? Either speech is totally protected, or it is not protected at all. The point of speech protection is to protect the most unpopular forms of speech. Popular forms of speech, obviously, need no protection. And I must agree wholeheartedly. I really like the way that article concludes. What did you think of that piece, Rolly?
Absolutely great articles you just read. The crackdown on freedom of speech on platforms such as Facebook and YouTube are of paramount importance for us to cover, which you just did. They're censoring free speech in an insulated way. They're doing it in ways that you wouldn't feel that it's, you know, a violation of free speech to do, like pulling down YouTube videos. That YouTube video, you know, YouTube themselves would consider hate speech. That's a violation of free speech in itself, because YouTube, for example, is not an independent agency. It's not like Renegade, for an example, where Kyle owns it. It's his platform, his rules. No, YouTube is different. It's backed up by the deep state. It's a DARPA and CIA project, you know, through and through since its conception, you know. And for them to not encourage free speech or allow it, to say, oh, we would do it, but the corporations won't allow it, that's baloney, you know, absolutely. And it's pretty ridiculous that Israel has their boots on the head of the Palestinians, and all they're saying is BDS. BDS, and then they just crush and crush much, much further. All they're saying is, let's not buy from Johnson & Johnson. You know what I mean? They're not calling for another Holocaust. And the idea of censoring the French comedian, Donde, the one that wears dashikis and African garb, I really want to hear what the man has to say. There is a language barrier because I don't speak French, but you know, they take his YouTube videos down all the time, and they have this thing where they have auto translation. They don't have it for him.
Really? That's very interesting. They're very selective then with the translate feature, making sure it's politically correct.
You can't even verify what he said. They don't even allow you that or allow that to you, you know? And they get the power to translate what you just said, you know? And if you're not a native French speaker, you'll never know what he said. Except for with Haaretz and the Times of Israel.
Well, we're seeing a lot more negative stories about how, you know, Facebook is refusing to learn any lessons. For that matter, among these media giants, they're still as bad as any of them. I've seen stories out of a lot of places lately critiquing them still. I mean, let's see, there's one even out of RT. Facebook will rank news sources by trust. But who does Facebook trust? It's a comical caption with a lot of, like, cutout Zuckerbergs, you know, all in front of Capitol Hill. Activist Post has another one, an article entitled Facebook Begins Ranking News Sites by Trust and Combating Propaganda During Elections. And then another out of a shtfplan.com. And theirs is titled Censorship. Facebook will ramp up, quote, news suppression ahead of 2018 midterms. I mean, some of these are trying to, you know, put it as at an present it as an angle that is anti-Trump. I suspect these are people who are pro-Trump, trying to you know, make you believe he's outside of the IT giant censorship of the media. You know, just because on some levels he had been calling out some as fake news. Well, I don't know, a lot of people like, you know, him embracing, even Alex Jones and this sort of thing. I couldn't believe it, though. Even today, earlier today, I heard a gentleman calling into a radio news show, you know, still completely refusing to get off the Trump train. He still today referred to Trump playing chess, you know, being a chess master, really. And these people are in just such denial. You know, they don't want to believe that they've been duped one more time. You know, they some of them feel like they're getting too old to, you know, they're running out of patience to be able to try to wait around for the next person to hope for or something, right?
Let me tell you something, Richard. This idea that, you know, we're alt media, that we're like media part B, is totally bunk. We are popular media. You, me, Charles Giuliani, and Kyle Hunt. You know, we're promoting what's popular. We're against the wars. We're for building infrastructures. We're pro legalization of marijuana. We're pro Second Amendment, pro First Amendment. And the media is not for that on CNN. They bolster guys like David Hogg, this total actor and a charade of a human being. You know, they put him in the forefront as being some sort of great activist. But if I go to Twitter and type in David Hogg just to read what people say about him, nobody has anything nice to say about David Hogg, you know, at all. Richard, did you catch the roundtable this week? I know you've been a little bit backed up, you know, with things, but I did a segment with Kyle where I came up with a theory about where the word alternative media came from.
I did, but here, why don't you repeat it again for this broadcast?
Yeah, sure. So I talk about Richard Spencer. We've talked about his homoerotic tendencies before, and we've talked about Milo Yiannopoulos, who's gayer than Bruno, and they're considered by Breitbart the founders of what's called the alt-right media. It's Richard Spencer's shindig, you know, the alt-right. That's his thing. You know, I'm a national social justice warrior. That's me. You know, that's my movement. You know, I'm a one-man army, right? So if you're calling yourself alt-right, that means you're prescribing to being just like Richard Spencer and his ideology, which might sound a lot like yours, but if you go into detail, he has nothing in common with you. He doesn't care about you. He's a national Bolshevik. What does that mean, you know? He's a big fan of Alexander Dugin, you know, and his occult rituals. Alexander Dugin has pictures of him hanging his daughter upside down in face paint with, like, nails in her face. You know, he's a worshiper of Baphomet. You know, you stay away from these people, you know? And I go on to talk about Gavin McGinnis, which is very popular with Breitbart and other platforms like The Rebel. And he did a sword trick with a black thing that I'm not going to go into ever again. And I talk about Homo Jones, you know, Alex Jones. And I named him that. I coined that phrase because Jeff Young, who was a former bandmate to David Mustaine of the band Megadeth, said on his show that the reason Alex Jones got divorced with his wife is because he was spending too much time with David Mustaine. And of course, David Mustaine and Alex Jones have mutual friends with Charlie Sheen, and they got a lot more common than they believe 9/11 was an inside job. You know, they all like to chase dragons, if you know what I mean. And this particular Jeff Young, you know, bandmate to Megadeth that I mentioned earlier, he was doing his show about David Mustaine's relationship with Alex Jones. And he said in the conclusion of this show, when these two guys are in a room together, nothing good can happen from it. So my hypothesis is where the alt-right media moniker, or actually, let's just say the term for it, came from was because they're alternative gay lifestyles.
You never can tell. I mean, with some of these high profile types, who definitely have very close-knit circles, and all seem to be, you know, very wealthy. Of course, you know, come from, you know, old money, as it were, you know, generationally well off, so to speak. You know, all the people that seem to affiliate with that crowd, and of course, yeah, the being close to you know, those at the White House, including Nancy Reagan, hanging out there, it really doesn't seem like legitimate true opposition to the current status quo, when, you know, they're portrayed to be so at odds. But then you're getting all this free press, you know, even in the wake of Charlottesville, you know, certainly got a lot of free press out of it, right?
Absolutely. They have unlimited access. You know, Richard Spencer with his wife, Nina, what's her name? King Koopa or something like that. Remember Mario Brothers guys? You know, they actually, went over to Laura Bush's house and they have access to the Bush family. And they actually got to go to their lakeside house and take pictures with Laura Bush together. And people have been telling me that you could get a president with a picture with the president of the United States or former president and his wife. You know, actually, Bush wasn't in the photo. I'm like, no, the hell you cannot. So they run a security background check on him for him to be able to be so close to these guys, you know, with their secret services. He must have checked out A-OK in their book.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for those who have not already, yeah, be very wary of some of these figures and look into their backgrounds, you know, do a little of the research rather than expecting someone else to have done it for you. Like we were discussing earlier, Rolly, you know, some of the important lessons to learn from the X-Files series. You know, the truth is out there, but trust no one, right?
Absolutely. Me and Richard like to talk to each other on Mondays. We have a phone conversation.
On the IT subject. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's not like Benjamin Netanyahu and Larry Silverstein's phone conversations on Sundays. You know,
we have much better like intentions for the people. Certainly. Yeah. Right, nothing for the people to be concerned about.
Right. We have some interesting
on the IT topic, though. Totally. Totally. We may have to get to the war agendas in the hour number two. But since we were on the topic of YouTube and Facebook and just these IT censorship tactics that are the norm, I did want to mention a little update. Those of you out there who've been keeping track of the wake of the Cambridge Analytica outing, I suppose you could say, you know, Cambridge Analytica's outing of what amount of data collection they had been doing, supposedly forcing Facebook, who are trying to be portrayed as the victim in all this, to give them large amounts of data. Facebook were, especially in the UK, in court up on charges, mostly for show, if you ask me. And then Cambridge Analytica itself, you know, we're seeing articles talking about, you know, facing charges, at least in the UK, if not in the States here. You know, I really don't see this being anything more than limited hangout to make you think something will be done about all of this and then just stop looking into it. You know, it's, and the average person, unfortunately, all too often will, you know, they'll believe most people in government and in even the IT world and corporations are, you know, with good intentions, altruistic at heart. And once this stuff's out there, you know, it'll get corrected within the month and we can just forget about it. You know, not the case. But I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, scrutinizing over Cambridge Analytica, and well, a lot of articles are pointing out that they're closing their doors, that the company's shutting down due to all this bad press. However, I did come across one article that noticed that that's not quite the case. For those of you who may have assumed that, and this one was out of theregister.co.uk. Which is titled Cambridge Analytica Dismantled for Good? No, it's just changed its name to Emmer Data. So the company formerly known as Cambridge Analytica shocked the media today when it announced an immediate shutdown and liquidation of its business. That shutdown, however, may be short-lived as Official documents indicate those behind the controversial analytics company will be launching as a new firm with a less toxic brand. The surprise announcement came on Wednesday evening when the UK-based Cambridge Analytica and its parent organization, SCL Elections, stated it would enter insolvency proceedings and disband immediately. The announcement came after Cambridge Analytica found itself at the center of a political firestorm when a former staffer blew the whistle on a data harvesting campaign that had covertly collected the personal information on more than 87 million Facebook users. These records were used to target particular voters with ads and social media posts in hope of influencing their decisions at the ballot box. Whether or not these persuasion tactics actually worked is up for debate, but an attempt was at least made with info sneakily swiped from people's profiles via a quiz app. The biz denies any wrongdoing. But it's now shutting down and simply rebranding at this as this other company. You know, it goes on to mention a bit details of some of the members. I mean, you know, you could look up the story for those who want to, you know, read the rest of the details. But, you know, just be aware that they haven't gone away. You know, I mean, so the same people who owned and ran that company are simply now going to be known as Emer Data, E-M-E-R-D-A-T-A. And so in future, you could feel free to do searches for that company to be sure that and spread this information, you know, certainly, you know, so make some more articles, you know. I mean, we don't need these people to, we don't need to make it any easier for these people to conceal themselves, you know, than they already are able to. But yeah, I just wanted to at least conclude with that. And yeah, it looks like we'll get to the updates on the war agendas. And you know, whatever other stories Raleigh and I have for you after the break here. So everyone, please do stick around. And Raleigh, please, you stick around as well, sir.
Immigration developing now across the whole of the European continent based on what you're seeing there in Germany.
This is a very good point because immigration is the future. You cannot work and live in a globalized world, in the middle of the world, in Europe, without immigration.
So there's a second thing in that black box, an unrelenting stream of immigration, non-stop. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
White sheets rack my mind. Drunken thoughts, old wounds and men. Why does the devil
rule? Renegade Broadcasting. Hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome back, everyone out there in Renegade Radio Land. We were just mentioning some of the sort of censorship, especially with some of these mega IT companies, which seem to have monopolies on, you know, much of the web traffic for their services. It is a problem, but fortunately we are seeing a lot of startup companies offering alternatives, even including the videos, both posting videos for archival, live streaming as well. I did want to shift gears on topics a bit, but just following up on these topics we discussed thus far, Raleigh, did you have some final thoughts on any of these we've been discussing here?
Absolutely. The most disappointing thing about the trial of Cambridge Analytica is we're never going to prosecute Renaissance Technology, the parent company. It's just a limited hangout, Cambridge Analytica. You know, they could just shut that down and just make another company. We're never going to get Robert Mercer's day in court, you know. We're never going to see him, you know, take the stand and confirm that he's actually a human being instead of just seeing these five photos over and over again of him and hear that he's just a private person that likes to collect weapons from the movie Terminator, you know, which is kind of ironic, you know, because it's an AI company. And if you're holding the weapon of Terminator, it's kind of signifying a sort of power, you know, over humanity. And those are the type of things that he likes to get a kick out of when he has people over for his house. And I wrote an article talking about Cambridge Analytica actually puts out Donald Trump's tweets on his BlackBerry phone at 2:00 in the morning. So when we hear these irrational tweets online for our commander in chief, you know, at nighttime on his golden tulip, that's not him writing that. That's Cambridge Analytica writing that. And that Cambridge Analytica horse, you know, that's a pony that a lot of people have been on. For an example, Steve Bannon was actually a vice president from Cambridge Analytica. And that's where Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner, I know you guys think that he's some sort of Illuminati shill. He's not a shill for the Illuminati. He is the Illuminati. But, you know, he's connected to Donald Trump, you know, they were in arranged marriage, you know, Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, you know, he gave his daughter to her. You know what I mean? I don't know where these guys get at, but that's not the point of this, you know, discussion right. tonight. But, right. But Laura Trump, for example, Eric's wife, was employed by the new campaign manager for Donald Trump's 2020 re-election campaign, and his name is Brad Pascal, and he hired, you know, Eric's wife, you know, and it makes you wonder, are all these guys spies, you know, working for Cambridge Analytica? We all know they are. I mean, it's obvious in the reports, but it's a vast octopus. Cambridge Analytica and its parent company, you know, is the head of that octopus. Actually, Richard, this is a little bit off topic, but I'll scoop it back in. Did you know that octopus only has 7 tentacles? The 8th tentacle that's mistaken as being a tentacle is not a tentacle at all. It's actually, it's phallus. Because there's one really? Tentacle smaller than the rest of the 7. I learned that at SeaWorld. But wow. If you look at pictures of like an octopus, you know, crushing the White House, and might even have a caption, Cambridge Analytica, they got their on everything. I didn't want to say it on air. This is a child-friendly show.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you guys know what I mean with Cambridge Analytica. You know, they're that all-encompassing octopus that's consuming all your information on the internet for itself. You know, Breitbart is the 4th largest messaging board service, and they're data mining the shit out of that. I mean, Cambridge Analytica is very much connected to Breitbart, you know, and Robert Mercer, because he owns both of these platforms, you know, and companies, as it were. And, you know, Cambridge Analytica is connected to Roger Stone, you know, the political operative that every Republican would like to hire to be their attack dog.
Right.
And he reached out to Julian Assange about the emails to, you know, to give Cambridge Analytica's findings. It's my theory, though. I can't prove or disconfirm or whatever, you know, that this is the case. But I really believe that Hillary Clinton's emails, all 30,000 of them came from Cambridge Analytica or some sort of spy firm that's connected to all these guys that I just said. You know, Donald Trump's inner circle.
Yeah, well, I mean, in some of these cases, yeah, you would expect the NSA to be able to have this information, such as just this, you know, entire batch, really, of the Hillary's emails. You would think that they would have had it as well, especially if it were on an unsecure server, you know. I know the FBI didn't it declined, you know, obtaining any records from the NSA and that, and a lot of similar cases where, you know, there are people that are just going to be protected, and that's just understood ahead of time, like this way that James Comey sort of glossed over, you know, this the idea of prosecuting Hillary and, you know, acting like he's in a position to make a decision. I mean, he actually even stated, of course, you know, how many things she was guilty of, and then just acted like it's in his power the way he just said, we know we're going to, you know, decline, basically, prosecution. The other, aspect with all of this is just how many mergers, you know, we're even aware of. Are disturbing. You know, we've already been aware for a while, for example, like Google and YouTube are together. I mean, even with when you think of the food industry, you know, I found it disturbing to find that Whole Foods partnered with Amazon. You know, that doesn't sound like a good thing. Well, Bayer and Monsanto combining, for that matter. I really never trusted either to begin with. But as far as a lot of these data mining companies, a lot of them are not even known to the public. You know, some of the biggest parent companies we're finding, you know, like this, what was it, SLC or something? The one, I mean, you know, most of the parent companies, you never even would have heard the name. And, you know, it's kind of like the symbolism when they refer to deep state. You know, it's just anonymity, so no one ever gets caught, right?
Absolutely. And remember that news that Google's moving to Israel? I don't know what became of that. They already moved to Israel. I feel like a dumbass. But, you know, this merger thing is just so encompassing. Everything merging together. And, you know, Amazon and Whole Foods teaming up is deeply disturbing. Amazon took off, you know, a lot of important document books pertaining to World War II. And also Google or Amazon itself actually has this idea that it could replace people with drones. You know, that's something the military is doing right now, replace people with drones. You know, so we don't have to hire workers that need to go to the bathroom and require days off. What type of society is Amazon building, seriously? But it's not going to help anything. Can't people just steal the packages that the drones drop? You know, you need somebody to go in and knock on the door and say, here's your package, you know. It's not really helping anything at all, drones, you know. People are going to shoot those things down, you know. And if they don't, they're cowards, you know. I'm not saying do anything illegal, guys, but I was just talking metaphorically, you know, with legislation, you know, to shoot those things down.
Yeah.
you know, yeah. Go ahead, Richard.
Oh, it reminds me though. Before it gets lost here, of the story of this one judge in the U.S. Who evidently is just part of this campaign to demonize Iran at the moment. We were discussing this earlier as well. U.S. court ignored fact that 9/11 terrorists were not Iranians. This U.S. court has come up with a verdict which says that Iran should pay vast compensation to relatives of the victims of 9/11, and that the country's frozen assets in the U.S. could be used to fulfill that court order. Sputnik discussed this with the Iranian lawyer and head of the campaign World Without Violence and Extremism, Amir Hassan Norbask. But I mean, you know, there was no evidence. You know, it's just because in his opinion, you know, this judge's opinion is how this verdict was being made. And yeah, this clearly is just for show, but part of the propaganda. Catch someone with the headlines who doesn't normally even pay attention to the wars or news, right, Rolly? That's what it's about.
It sounds a lot like confirmation bias with this judge. I hate Iran. I was about to say I hate Israel. That's me talking. But the judge is saying I hate Iran. So he's working backwards for his conclusion. And he worked all the way to go ahead and say that Iran did 9/11. Prove it, bitch. Can you prove that? You know, the United States government could not prove the hijackers of 9/11, the supposed Arabs that did it. They didn't cough up photos or prove any hard evidence. Matter of fact, a lot of the evidence in the towers were scooped away and given to China before anybody could get at ground zero to take a look at it. And Mueller,
there were no dancing Iranians, is the point, right?
But aren't there Arabs in Iran? That's probably what the judge is thinking, you know what I mean? He doesn't distinguish between Arabs and Persians at all, you know? Yeah. Farsi people, well, you know?
Well, I don't know how
I don't know how well known the story of the dancing Israelis ever caught on. As far as people who only focus on the corporate media, a lot of them may have just never even heard about the dancing Israelis when 9/11 happened, right?
Yeah, Carl Cameron actually did a report on it. You know, when Fox News is good, it's good. But when Fox News is bad, they're absolutely the worst. And that rare moment that Carl Cameron did a report on the dancing Israelis, you know, my hat's off to him, and I really want to figure out what happened to him after doing that report. I couldn't even find him. It's almost like he's been scrubbed offline, you know. I don't even know what he's up to these days, but...
That was a good piece of evidence regarding what was on corporate media, that along with BBC reporting the collapse of the second tower 10 minutes before it happened, was it?
That's another good hard evidence. I'm standing behind the rubble of towers. and it went down right behind you, and you saw it in real time. And then, of course, BBC had Ehud Barak talking about, building a coalition. Otherwise, we can't have a no world order. And it was Al-Qaeda that did it, and Osama bin Laden is responsible. And the reporter was like, we're not saying it's Osama bin Laden quite yet. No, I'm not saying that it's Osama bin Laden yet. But we need a new world order. Absolutely ridiculous. And there was a lot.
But this Iran deal, seems to be what most of this is now leading up to. You know, I mean, it's up for renewal is the thing. This Iran deal, and I mean, you know, this is part of the P5+1, which is a bunch of countries united to allow inspections from the IAEA, international body. To confirm that they're not trying to manufacture nuclear weapons. Funny how, nations such as the U.S. Are allowed to, of course. But, it just depends on which nation you are, of course. And if you use a Jewish private central bank for your country or not, you know, little things that can be issues, of course. But the Israelis, of course, you know, Israel has never allowed IAEA inspections. They've never been in compliance themselves. Iran has always been in compliance so far with the current deal, you know, the current Iran nuclear deal. They've been in compliance all along so far, and international bodies, namely the IAEA, among others, have confirmed this. And the U.S. Thus far has failed to comply with their side of the deal. That is not at all publicized, of course, in the West, or the argument would fall through faster than an egg timer runs out. So, basically these are some of the key facts that you really need to spread more that are being completely ignored and that make all the difference. If we are to ultimately wind up with this war with Iran. Right now, we're already seeing conflicts in Syria, between Israel and Iran, not just Israel and Syria, but Israel and Iran, who are in Syria helping the Syrian army. Russia is helping them there as well. We're having conflicts between U.S. and Russian troops as Russia, helps the Syrian army. We're still having some reports of ISIS. This one article has been referring to ISIS that Israel had been launching an attack on. Of course, ISIS is always a fabricated puppet opponent put in place by the U.S. and Israel. And of course, Israel is always the commander-in-chief of the war party in the Middle East. Don't be fooled to think that the U.S. or the U.K. are ever calling the shots.
Absolutely. Our generals, whenever Israel tells them to jump, they say, how high, Mr. Jew? You know, it's absolutely appalling that it's what we're reduced to. And it's going to be a matter of time before Iran is knocked off before we hear about yellow cake inside of North Korea after they destabilize that particular section of the world. You know, they got to jump ship. They got to find a new bad man with bad intentions, you know, that threatens the only democracy and democracy everywhere. You know, the only democracy and the beacon of light of Israel needs to shine brighter than the Arabs. And they can't have the technology that Western countries are allotted. We got to just crack those nuts, you know. And going back to North Korea, you know, this idea of destabilizing North Korea, you know, after they just made peace with South Korea, despite years of instigation, you know, they still, like, in the back rooms are planning of destabilizing it. Do you know how much of a nightmare it will be to destabilize North Korea? Because if you destabilize one Korea, you'll destabilize another one. Because the conflict will spill over, you know, inevitably. Well, but these people in North Korea, you know, we've been told in the media that they worship their president or chairman as a god, Kim Jong-un, as a god, you know. They cannot poop. That they found unicorn caves that prove of his divinity. And then he was born on a hill. You know, there are people that worship him like a god. And once you destabilize the country, you're going to have a bunch of religious fanatics that to contend with. And that conflict is not going to go anywhere soon. So you guys got to better come up with a better contingency plan than just knocking over a country and replacing regime. I say the regime should stay, even though I hate communism and I think it's the worst form of government.
I agree. You're right. I think, you know, because I mean, and we see, especially in regions such as Middle East and North African countries, sometimes these dictators are the best thing for the populations, for the current state of evolution of those peoples. Is just the most fair scientific way to put it. And as far as North Korea, South Korea, I mean, I've been pointing out, in past shows as well, the U.S. wants to keep their bases in South Korea. The South Korean current leader is in favor of the Sunshine Policy, you know, reunification. You know, the leaders of North and South Korea have been in a lot of talks, especially in recent months. And, well, just as one thing that I think indicates where things are headed. Currently, South and North Korea, their table tennis teams for the Olympics are requesting to be represented united as Korea for the Olympics. And I didn't read the full article. I'm guessing it might be honored. Regardless of whether it's honored or not, the point is that they, for them to want to do that, I think is very telling as to what we could expect for the future. If there isn't too much Western intervention, as it were, you know, we have, you know, had just a report of Trump planning to set a talk for the near future with North Korea, a summit. And, well, I was just reading a story out of antiwar.com. Kim would give up nuclear weapons for U.S. to pledge not to invade. Of course, you know, so many other articles point out why the U.S. cannot be trusted by countries in these ways anymore, especially the ones who go against the private central bank, as I say. That's so Iran, North Korea, it's no surprise that these are the big enemies on the planet right now. If you notice that they don't have private central banks, Iran hasn't initiated a war of aggression in over 200 years. And, you know, what I've just described about North Korea, it really doesn't sound like they want anything but peace with South Korea at the moment. And Raleigh makes some very good points about the citizens and Kim Jong-un and, you know, his lineage being appropriate at the moment for the leadership, clearly, with these sort of people. But I mean, yeah, there are a lot of stories recently pointing out America's current track record as an interventionist and not being able to be trusted. This one article, this is out of Strategic Culture, why each U.S. president ends up a ruthless interventionist. And, of course, the president's just a figurehead. But basically, U.S. foreign policy, you could replace that with. And another article out of, well, foreignpolicy.com, isn't that ironic? America can't be trusted anymore. They title this article with similar sentiments where, you know, Kim Jong-un can't expect the best if he does give up all his nuclear weapons. He'd be better off just teaming up with South Korea and saying, hey, leave us alone. You know, we want these weapons of deterrent. Why shouldn't we be able to have them? You know, why don't you go over and force Israel to comply to an IAEA inspection? You know, I think they could just start with a statement like that, perhaps. I don't know what do you say of it, Rolly?
Absolutely, and plus, like, Israel has not agreed to any sort of nuclear agreement involving their nukes. You know, they had it illegally for several years. It wasn't until Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle in the late 1970s about it, and he subsequently, like, suffered dearly for it, you know, years in isolation for it. And I take, for an example, you know, the idea that North Korea is going to nuke the West, you know, the West Coast and just absolutely decimate, for example, San Francisco, is erroneous. So they have intercontinental ballistic missiles that could reach that far. I mean, they can't even keep the power on at nighttime. You know, they don't even have toilets that flush in North Korea. And everybody in the United States is scared to whisper about little North Korea.
Right back, folks.
First professing Jew to be elected to the United States Senate, Judah. See how efficiently he ran his sugarcane plantation with 140 slaves, Judah. Imagine his courage as he resigned from the United States Senate to serve as Secretary General, Secretary of War, and later as Secretary of State for the Confederacy. His image is on Confederate money, Judah. Watch as Jews help in his spectacular escape after the war ended, and enjoy how the Rothschild dynasty rewarded the first Jew in the U.S. Senate for protecting their financial investment in the African slave industry and effort to destroy the United States. Judah. Coming this fall.
And burn so often, but I said.
And we're back. Well, we were discussing the current war developments. I don't know, I guess we could touch on that for a few more minutes. I don't know how much you've been keeping up with things, Rolly. I haven't really kept up much with, say, these little side wars. I mean, such as Yemen. I know Saudi Arabia was primarily in this Yemenese war. But, you know, this is clearly something that the U.S. wants, Israel wants as well. I don't know. For the most part, I mean, Saudi Arabia do seem to be on the same side and sometimes do a bit of the most dirty work for those countries. But as far as Syria, certainly Israel wants to hang on to the Golan Heights, having already been selling the oil that had been discovered there in recent years. And, you know, they're trying to run pipelines to Europe, to sell it to Europe, you know, and Assad has the right to not be okay with this, you know, which has, you know, been a current point of contention among others. And so, you know, the more the rest of the war is ending, you know, we even have forces from Russia and Iran assisting the Syrian army. And the more things come to a close where they're, you know, all of the remaining factions are being defeated and there's no more reason to be there, certainly Assad is going to want full control back of the Golan Heights. And, you know, that Israel just doesn't want to see that happen. And so, you know, I think in a lot of ways, it almost seems like the West is playing it by ear at this moment in that regard. And then, of course, Israel would ultimately like to see Iran broken up into smaller bits. And also, of course, you know, bulldoze any archaeological findings that could show the Persian ancient society through all their artifacts. You know, the same way they like to hide the history of Palestine, but far more so to, you know, the ancient Persian Empire, whereas Israel doesn't have much anything you can ever find around anywhere to back up all their claims in their Abrahamic books, Judaic texts of, you know, be it the Old Testament, Torah, Talmud, what have you. And then, yeah, we have some people who evidently will be on Iran's side. As of current, you know, all signs have pointed to the fact that Russia will back Iran to the bitter end. And all signs point to if, you know, the largest powers got into a full-on conflict, that China would ultimately back Russia were it in a full-on conflict with the West. That were to ever develop. And then, of course, lately we have a lot of, you know, these people who used to be part of, you know, various, various White House cabinets, you know, such as Paul Craig Roberts out there, you know, mentioning a lot of fear-mongering to some extent. You know, it doesn't seem in a lot of ways much different than Alex Jones talking about how many people in Washington just want to go to war with Russia, you know, to solve problems with the petrodollar, with the economy, with the American people being fed up with the big government and its corruption, need of a slimming down and refusal to give up their First and Second Amendment rights. But the way it comes at people is very fear-mongering in its approach. But, you know, supposedly this was what we are told to expect. You know, I don't know. At the last minute, would that not happen? You know, would Russia not back Iran, you know, and not say it's not worth it? I do think there's a strong possibility of that, especially with the strong, perhaps not pro-Israel so much, but there is a strong Jewish oligarch influence still influencing Putin, Putin's Russia. And Rolly, I know you agree with me very much on these points.
Absolutely. So the question is, will Russia leave Iran high and dry? Absolutely, if it's in their interest. You know, Putin's a gangster, and gangsters tend to be very nationalistic. You know, he's worried about his spot in the dirt. You know, he's worried about his control. And you see Israel and Russia's connection in the Defense Department, you know, they're very tight together. You know, Russia has been sanctioned, you know, not allowed to export many of their weapons, but Iran is kind of opening up the floodgates, you know, for a lot of weapons coming out of, you know, Russia itself. And Russia makes the S-300s that could literally fire at Mach 14 speed that could absolutely decimate a General Dynamics, you know, plane, the F-16s, which subsequently Israel has the second largest fleet of F-16s that they pretty much stolen out of the backs of the Pentagon. But they didn't steal it. They got it from our tax dollars. We gave them money so they could buy it and they could throw some sort of ceremony about how they modified, you know, the Lockheed Martin, the F-35, a deer, because they put some sort of like radars in it. And this is some sort of big Israeli achievement, you know. But absolutely, I think that Putin wants to get his edge inside of Russia. He wants that pie. He said, you know, that pie is sweet. You know, if you're in the middle of the world, which is literally Israel, you know, because they're in the middle of the Silk Road, you know, in between Asia, Europe, and Africa, pretty much, you know, they're right there. You know, it kind of reminds me of a conversation that Paul Heyman had with Stone Cold Steve Austin on WWE, where Stone Cold Steve Austin asked Paul Heyman, you know, he's a Jewish. It seems awfully, it seems like you Jews have a lot of power, you know, in general. And he's like, Paul Heyman said, yeah, we do have power, but the problem is we don't have much resources. So that's what it is. You know, that's something they joke about all the time. So like Moses picked a place with no oil. There's no petrochemicals, you know, underneath the palaces like they do with Saudi Arabia, you know, that went to the Arabs, you know. So they got to get resources. Otherwise, they're not bringing anything to the table besides playing middleman and instigator to Russia, China, and the United States and the European nations.
Oh, and insisting on, you know, their narrative of the Holocaust, which has been completely disproven, to be well compensated for by nations, right? You know, they still want all these payments. Right now, Poland has been contesting over, you know, some large, well, amount of blame, really, that they're trying to justify some additional payments for. But you know, a lot of the European countries and certainly America get the Holocaust thrown in there as part of this collective guilt we're all supposed to feel to help justify funding Israel. But it's just ridiculous the amount the U.S. gives to Israel every year, you know, which, you know, generally isn't even making reference to anything such as, you know, this claim from the past. But it is a major problem. I mean, it's like just some sort of, you know, bacteria or something that just keeps growing and spreading, you know?
Absolutely. And they're trying to keep the Holocaust in the forefront of all of our minds. You know, you made a really good discovery when you were sitting, you know, in your car driving. You actually saw one of these 3D Holocaust hologram exhibits in your neck of the woods. That was a really good find on your part, Richard, you know, that they actually are going to hire 3D images of Holocaust survivors so that decades later their thoughts will, and their whole stick and their whole best used carsman salesman pitch, you know, live on. And there's another article that I wrote this week. I don't know if you caught it. It's titled Gold Jewelry for Jews to Commemorate SS Identification Numbers. And this woman from Florida has her own store, and she kind of did like an infomercial for it. Her name is Dana Rogozinski. You know, that's a mouthful. But she came up with the idea to get closer to her grandmother by taking her tattooed arm barcode and actually put it on a piece of jewelry so that people can wear. There's actually a man from Florida named Robert Tagan who came up with the most perfect romantic gift for his wife. You know, he didn't really know how much she would like it, but she absolutely adored it and brought her to tears. You know, the gift was, it was this product. You know, it was the SS numbers of her grandmother. Never have she felt more closer to her Nana than that moment. You know, so it's very important to Jewish strategy to keep us guilty, because it keeps us in a state of paralysis where we can't think rationally. And that's what a lot of ideologies we've been force-fed for so many years, you know, with white guilt. We can't even think about what's in our best interest whatsoever. We want to bomb Iran because it's a Nazi country, you know, full of white supremacists. You know, that's essentially, you know, a lot of narratives that we've been hearing. And that judge that thinks that Iran is responsible for 9/11 probably thinks this erroneous garbage as well. It's absolutely appalling. We need to start thinking straight, people. We need to get our minds together. We don't need to have all these webs in our head. We need to clear this out, you know, these cobwebs, you know. We need to start thinking rationally and thoughtfully and not serve somebody else's interests. We're not drones, people, you know. We need to serve what's in our interest. And we're white people. We like each other. You know, we have dinners, you know, luncheons together. Do we really get along with other races? I like certain black people and brown people. I don't hate them, but white people are family to me, you know. It's people that I identify with and see every day and, you know, could tell a joke where I don't have to worry about offending somebody, you know. We're our own. We belong to each other, white men and women together. You know, we're not from men and you're from Venus. You know, we're one and the same. We're two sides of a coin.
Absolutely. That's well said. It's nothing that we need to be conditioned to feel guilty for. And I had quite a few other things I might not have time to get to with you here. I hate to move through topics too quickly where we can't really comment much, but by the way, I just wanted to correct one point from the I believe the last Monday show where I was mentioning just Iranian casualties in Syria at the behest of the Israeli army. It was actually a larger number than what I had reported. I had reported a dozen, you know, Iranians killed by Israeli soldiers in Syria. And actually, you know, I misread that in a hurry. And no, it was actually dozens, you know, quite a few dozen. So, I mean, yeah, you know, quite a bit of all of these countries' forces have been in and conflicts, including fatal conflicts. There are, though, a lot of disturbing facts as far as percentages, really. When you look at the non-fatal examples, really, I mean, Israel is a prime example of this. We had actually a lot of details, really, of their Israeli aggression against the Iranians in Syria from fort-rust.com, for that matter. But just as far as the routine day-to-day treatment of the Gazans, you know, the Palestinians in Gaza by the IDF soldiers, there was one very disturbing article I was reading, basically going into detail about how, you know, how common it is for the soldiers to be sure to hit the joints, you know, like the elbows or the knees, ensuring that, you know, these people will be permanently disabled. And it's really cruel when you really put it in perspective and just look at the amount of numbers that are involved here, you know, just how frequent this sort of thing is. There was also another story out of a Middle East Monitor. Israel troops have wounded 8,000 peaceful protesters since the 30th of March. You know, that wasn't very long ago, you know, about a week ago. You know, there have been recent comments from those in Gaza saying, you know, that we'll continue to protest or we will die. You know, I mean, that's what they see as the future for Palestine. You know, I mean, this protesting at this point, I mean, they see where things are heading, what has happened thus far. And you really can't blame them. You know, this one article out of Israel-Palestine News, Netanyahu, don't look here where we're shooting. The children, look over there at Iran. It was a pretty good read. But yeah, there are a lot of good articles that really put this in perspective for people who just don't understand the full scope of things. And then when you look at the guilt we're shown toward the Jewish people, toward Israel, and all the funding we give them and all these laws against speaking about them, you know, this is something that most people aren't made aware of around us, or else things would already be changing. You would have to think if we alert enough people, we can get to, you know, reach a threshold capacity. But yeah, this one story was out of Israel-Palestine News. Israel troops first shot the Gaza journalist's left leg, then his right, and they didn't stop there. And it goes into detail of one of these cases, but it really is disturbing when you look into it. And I don't know, one piece of good news, the story out of Reuters from May 4th, Israel withdraws from race for UN Security Council seat. Israel withdrew prior Friday from a race against Germany and Belgium for two seats on the United Nations Security Council in 2019 to 2020. The 193-member UN General Assembly is due to vote next month on five new members for a two-year term starting on January 1st, 2019. Israel, Germany, and Belgium were competing for two seats allocated to the Western European and others group. Germany and Belgium are now running uncontested, but they still need to win more than two-thirds of the overall General Assembly vote to be elected. And I have a quote here. It was decided that we will continue to act with our allies to allow for Israel to realize its right for full participation and inclusion in decision-making processes at the UN. Israel's mission to the United Nations said in a statement, a UN source speaking on condition of anonymity said Israel had withdrawn because of its low chances of winning. Regional groups generally agree upon the candidates to put forward, and Competitive races for seats are increasingly rare. Each year, the General Assembly elects five new members. Richard Grenell, who was sworn in as the U.S. ambassador to Germany on Thursday, said in March that the United States had brokered a deal in the 1990s with countries in the UN's Western European and Others group to allow Israel to run uncontested for a seat. Grenell, who was the U.S. spokesman at the UN from 2001 to 2009, tweeted about the issue on March 14th. Quote, Israel has waited 19 years. The U.S. must demand that Europe keep its word, he said. German diplomats denied any such agreement was made. The Israel mission to the UN declined to comment at the time on Grenell's tweet. The council on which the five permanent members, the United States, Britain, France, China, and Russia, hold veto power, is the only UN body that can make legally binding decisions as well as imposing sanctions and authorizing the use of force. To ensure a geographical representation on the council, there are five seats for African and Asian states, one for Eastern European states, two for the Latin American and Caribbean states, and two for Western European and other states. Indonesia and the Maldives are competing for one Asian Pacific seat in 2019 to 2020, while South Africa and the Dominican Republic are running uncontested for the African and Latin American and Caribbean group seats. So at least Israel's giving up for any UN Security Council seat. I don't know. You have to think of that at least as good news, right, Raleigh?
Absolutely. Going back to what you said earlier about maximum damage of crippling Palestinians by shooting them in the joint, you know, what I find is amazing is this idea that there's no such thing as Palestinians. They're all Arabs. You know, even though the Romans and the Greeks recognized that there's a strip of land called Palestine, and the whole existence of there being a group of people that lived in Palestine, they're only known for suicide bombing. And that was only a three-year campaign between 2000 and 2003. And there's been no suicide bombings since then, you know. And, you know, this idea of demonizing to such an extent of they're not even human. But Jews actually only consider themselves human. They like to play these word games that were for humanity and democracy. And they run hot and cold with the UN a lot of the times. But they run the UN, and they got their attack dog America, you know, fully behind it. And a lot of these guys that say they want to get rid of the UN and the one world government, they do it because they love Zionism. And they believe that Israel believes that there should be no sovereignty except for Israel, of course. And everything else should be, every people should be atomized and just be goyim, you know, mixed race, you know, don't have souls, animals. You know, we talked about earlier about Jews and oil. They believe that every resource should be theirs according to their Torah, you know, every drop of water, every grain, you know, grain of sand, every grass field, plot of land, you know, essentially belongs to them, and we should be working their fields for them. And the UN is really a toothless tiger, taking a phrase from George Galloway, but it really is. It's a toothless tiger, you know. It really has no power. There's a General Assembly in the back room where you could criticize Israel, but that's all it is. And we got 100 senators last year, including Bernie Sanders, signing a petition, you know, getting rid of this back room where you could bitch about Israel, but not really carry any weight. I mean, come on, social Democrats. You guys are supposed to be about democracy and against the apartheid system. I wish it was the apartheid system. inside of Israel and Palestine, because then at least there'd be some humanity behind it, but it's pure genocide. And Bernie Sanders probably has a plot of land over there and, you know, West Bank, you know, and on Palestinian settlements. So, yeah, I don't put much faith in the UN or social justice warriors and social Democrats.
Absolutely. Well, another interesting developments that we've seen lately. I don't know if you caught that one story I sent you about the the warnings they're now going to have for YouTube. I don't know, the government funding warnings. I guess it's just more and more they're trying to cooperate with the corporate media platforms. You know, they mentioned quite a few of them, CBC, BBC, NPR, PBS. And just, I don't know, trying to askew the words and terms. For some people, they might not mind the word public as much as government, you know. So, you know, they're trying to actually make it a little obscured. But, you know, it's clear that these platforms are just being more and more monitored, controlled, and weeded out. I mean, Facebook has been removing a lot more of the independent media or anything that goes against the stories they'd like you to see. You know, the fallout in the local regions is disturbing. Rolly, you had formerly been in North Carolina. Did you see that one story I sent you? 28 illegals arrested for child rape in North Carolina. And they're saying that actually brings the total up to 89 sexual assault charges. Pretty disturbing. Right? Our governments are just ready to clashes of civilization. Thanks, Rolly. Thanks, everyone who's listening.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Have a good night, buddy. Masks
are made. Thank you.
Broadcasting has a sister site where you can find insightful articles from the past and present, the latest in health and wellness, research, analysis of current events, profound poetry, amazing artwork, lots of videos and podcasts from other content creators, and so much more. We are in a struggle to awaken as many people as possible, put an end to our enslavement in this toxic culture, and create a future where we can be happy, healthy, and free. Go to RenegadeTribune.com, browse the great content, and do consider joining the crew in publishing your own original work.